freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. The only way they can inherit the freedom we have known is if we fight for it, protect it, defend it, and then hand it to them with the well-taught lessons of how they in their lifetime must do the same. And if you and I don't do this, then you and I may well spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Patriot Coalition Live podcast. I'm Matthew Nugent.
And I'm Jason Marocek.
The purpose of this podcast is to restore constitutional governance and inspire other Americans to help us in this mission, particularly members of our armed forces, veterans, first responders, and all those people that support them. Before we get started, we'd like to share a little bit about our stories and why we are so passionate about our mission of restoring constitutional governance to our nation.
Well, I'll start. So my story actually starts when I was 10 years old. Gosh, I could barely remember, but that's when I decided I wanted to go to West Point. And so I focused all of my time and energy on the things that I needed to do to get there, right? And for me, it was about the selfless service of those who serve in our military. It's a noble profession. And even from that young age, I remember thinking, why is it that only some people serve in the military, right? We all get the benefit, but why do only some of them serve? They're willing to make that ultimate sacrifice on behalf of everybody. So I started thinking about that. I was like, look, there's no reason why I shouldn't also share some of that burden. And so I worked really hard from that time on. And then, believe it or not, it was on my 18th birthday that I got my acceptance letter. And I remember it still. I was working
great birthday
with,
present.
Yes, it was. I was working with the Associated Student Body at my high school, restocking vending machines. I can actually picture where I was. And my mom walks across the quad and she hands me the letter. So like you said, it was a great birthday gift. So from there, I went on, studied and worked hard at West Point, and I graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Systems Engineering, and was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the infantry. So from that point on, it was a change, as you well know, Matt. Once you become on active duty or you're serving actually as a lieutenant in the Army, you do a lot of maturing really quickly in leadership. Now, you've been studying that. You're in the leadership lab at West Point, but It's where the rubber meets the road, and there's a lot of maturing that goes on there. And so this is where I started to see the difference between, the reasons why somebody initially serves, and then once they are actually serving in a unit, you take on a lot of other burdens in terms of, now you're responsible for the person to your right and to your left, and for the men who serve under you. And so it's definitely a sobering thought. And that's where I started really ingraining the thought of, what we learned in our cadet prayer is that doing the harder right over the easier wrong.
It is hard.
It is. It's very difficult, especially when you have so many people who are looking to you, and they really do. As a leader, your men, and they look at, of course, here was in the infantry, so it was all men at that point. I don't even know today if it is, but at that point, they were all looking to you, for courage to do the right thing. And so you're always in the spotlight. So anyways, a lot of maturing went on there, and it's kind of where the seeds were planted for the motto, my personal motto that I unofficially talk about today, and that is principles only mean something if you stick to them when it's inconvenient. And so I've kind of carried that through with me today and through my time in the service as well as in civilian world. So I was honorably discharged and went back to civilian life, began a family. And that's really when politics came into focus for me. So it was moving back into, where I had grown up, and now starting a family. Now I've got, I had a small boy. He was about a year old at that point, right around there. And it kind of, things hit home, right? Now you are going to be responsible for this young life and maybe more soon to come. And you start to really pay attention to things a lot more, right? What kind of world are we bringing young man into? You know, what, how do I have to provide for him? How do I protect him? And so the first thing I noticed when I got back and started to kind of introspectively look at how I wanted to raise these kids, I noticed all the negative effects of the illegal alien invasion. It impacted every aspect of our lives, from jobs and security, you know, traffic and crime and healthcare, all sorts of negative impacts.
Where did you live? Where did you live at the time?
This was in Southern California. So what we lovingly referred to later on as the one of the border disaster areas. And so at that point, you know, in my naivete, because I just come out of the military where you answer to the commander in chief, who is also the president. So they sort of discourage, and you remember this, they sort of discourage you from talking politics in the Army. So I was pretty naive politically. And so I came here, identified, you know, hey, this is a problem for raising my family here. But that's okay. We've got elected officials who will take care of that problem for us, right?
You think?
Yeah, it wasn't long before I was, you know, tapping my fingers on the desk saying, wait a minute, what's going on here? Nothing was happening. Changes weren't being made. The ball was being kicked down the road, whatever metaphor you want to use. The elected officials were useless in this effort. And that was a seminal moment for me. You know, my passion for public service didn't end just because I got out of the service. Nor did my oath of office, my oath of service. It did not expire at that point. And I've always been somebody who, you know, I don't just like to complain about a problem. I'm a problem solver. That's just the way I am. So, and I realized I don't still need to be wearing a uniform to serve my country. So I started turning on talk radio, listening to what was being said about the issue of the illegal alien invasion. And went to a couple of events that were held with some other like-minded patriots. And it was here I grabbed some folks who were like-minded and shared my passion and my drive to do something about it. And I co-founded what today would be called the Patriot Coalition. Now, back then it was called the Fire Coalition, and it was dedicated solely to fighting against the illegal alien invasion. So this
when you founded that?
Yeah, so then I was, let's see, about 30 years old, I guess. This is back in 2004.
Awesome.
Yeah. So some life experience, but this was just another step in my effort to kind of serve and fulfill my oath. So fast forward, you know, the invasion's still going on today. I mean, nothing has changed. Obviously, we've made some strides. Mm-hmm. We've lost some. But the scope of the coalition changed. And this is when we changed our name back in 2009. We changed it to the Patriot Coalition. And we increased the scope to include what today is our current mission, which is to restore constitutional governance to the United States of America and preserve it for our descendants. That very, very important last part. During this time, obviously this is just volunteer work. You know, this is not my full-time job. So during this time, I was a consultant for one of the big four consultancy when I went to work for in the federal sector. After that, I started a custom software development company that I ran for several years. I've been a business analyst for a global medical device manufacturer. And then most recently, I also made a run for Congress here in Texas. So unsuccessful. I didn't defeat my opponent in the primary, but it was a fantastic learning experience. Even to this day. So, but that's why we're here today, right? So we're here to further the mission of restoring constitutional governance. And through this wonderful network of patriots and veterans and so forth, I was blessed. God has blessed me to come into the path of Matt. And, we were fast friends right from the start. And, he brought this idea to me. He said, hey, you know, what we're doing here, a podcast would be a great medium in order to further the mission. To one of the pillars of our strategy is education. So why don't we use a podcast? And boy, was he right. So that was how he and I came to know each other. And I've been blessed by the relationship ever since. It's really important that as part of the strategy that we're educating Americans on the principles of liberty, constitutional governance, and the proper role of government in America. So that kind of brings us up to the present for me, Matt. What about you?
Yeah, thanks, Jason. It's always great to hear your origin story. And what's amazing is that what you're sharing here, Jason, through this podcast, and we are co-hosting Jason's fire and no pun intended, but his passion on the Patriot Coalition to get it going. It's going to be the start of something big, even though it's been growing for the last 16 years. And people all over the world will hear this. So thank you, Jason. Want to start with that? But
my pleasure.
But awesome. So, but as far as as I go, like you, I wanted to the Army, and actually, my father was in the Army. In fact, I'm blessed with the strong military heritage in my family. I've got five brothers. That's right. My mom has six sons, and five of us have served in the military. Two were Marines. They give us trash all the time. One was Navy, and another brother was in the Army, and I, of course, was in the Army. So my father actually served in Vietnam. He was in the infantry in the first GAV. He was enlisted, and then, became an officer and was a company commander in the first cavalry. While he was in Vietnam, he was awarded three Bronze Stars, one for valor, and the Silver Star, which is a harrowing story behind that. And he's only told me that story, Jason, once in my life. And it's pretty intense. That's all I'll say about that. But before I get to kind of how I got to join the Army, there's some important events that occurred in my life that we need to cover. Now, before I finished high school, I studied Russian, the language Russian, on my own. Well, to be clear, my mom made me study. Thinking, your mom made you study Russian? It is kind of strange, but
hardcore.
That's for certain. Raising six boys.
Yeah,
she had to be. So, but she knew I wanted to join the Army. She knew that languages would be a way to do that, and Russian in particular would help, especially since the Russians were enemies to the United States. Ironically, learning Russian opened the door for me to become a student ambassador to the USSR in 1989. USSR is used interchangeably with Soviet Union, okay? So it turned out that we visited the Soviet Union during a time of great change, okay? And not long after we returned to the United States, the Soviet Union actually collapsed, which occurred in 1991. But switching gears to West Point, compared to Jason, I was a late bloomer. I wasn't 10 years old. I was 14 when I said, I want to go to West Point. Now, here's the thing. What attracted me to go to West Point, because I had heard that West Point taught you how to be a good person. They taught you how to be a man of character. Character was, and it still is, important to me. And I teach the same to my children. Now, you can't control where you grew up. I couldn't control whether or not my parents were together or where we lived or where we were rich or poor or how rich or how poor. But I knew the one thing I could control was my character and how I responded to whatever life threw at me. However, when I was done with high school, I was done with school and wanted a break. So I enlisted into the Army as a linguist in the military intelligence branch. So that would be my third language, after Russian. And I studied Czech because at the time, the Soviet Union occupied Czechoslovakia and they were basically a puppet nation. So at that time in our nation's history, my job as a linguist was defending our country against communism in the Soviet Union. It turned out that I did well enough enlisted in the Army to enter West Point, which I did through the West Point Prep School, and I entered as part of the class of 1996.
Yeah. So to those listening really quick, so Matt graduated a year ahead of me and at West Point, which means that he was one of the upper class cadets that was more than likely hazing me at any given time.
Yeah, that's right. I don't remember specifically.
Nor do I, but you probably were.
Yeah. I was a haze back then, folks. It's true, but what Jason is alluding to is at West Point was tough on many levels, the military rigor, the standards, the expectations, the academics. I certainly learned a lot about character and I grew and matured and I am still growing and maturing. But at West Point, I was a Russian major and I actually had the opportunity to visit Russia again, this time in 1995, which was, of course, after the collapse of the Soviet Union and the introduction of free enterprise economics into Russia. Note, communism did not actually collapse in 1991. The Soviet Union collapsed. Communism did not fall. Basically, the leaders of the communist nation, USSR, said, we are folding the USSR, okay? So a quick lesson on the USSR.
Before you, Matt, I just want to interject here. I mean, I don't want people to miss that really important point you just made. The Soviet Union collapsed in 1991. Communism did not fall. And it's That's a right. huge distinction because communism is, as people probably well know, is alive and well. We didn't defeat it yet. It is still an active enemy to liberty.
Yeah, that's right. That's 100% true. Thank you for making that point, Jason. So, but at the time, or I should say up to that time, the Soviet Union was made up at the highest number, 15, what you could say, states, Latvia, Estonia, and Russia, et cetera, Ukraine, Moldova, and Russia was the main state. In December of 1991, right around Christmas time, funny thing is, a lot of communist countries who folded happened around Christmas time. That's a great Christmas present. But the leaders of the Soviet Union all agreed to dissolve the Soviet Union and let the 15 states, of those which had not already declared their independence, let them be independent. The Soviet Union, then Russia, okay, also declared that they would no longer be present in those countries it occupied, Poland, Czechoslovakia, East Germany. So this is when the Berlin Wall came down, the official end of the Cold War. So it was an incredible time in our history and a great victory for the United States. So going ahead a few years, in 1996, I was commissioned as an engineer officer, and I had some great Army training, airborne school, sapper school, and what we call the Army's elite weight loss program, Ranger School.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh man, glad to be done with that school. So after I fulfilled my 5-year requirement and was honorably discharged from the Army as a captain, I went into the professional business world, sales, and started some of my own businesses, as well as did some contract work for the government, both abroad and here in the United States. So I've enjoyed the freedoms that I've defended. And quite frankly, today, many of you in the military and our law enforcement officers throughout the United States and on our borders, we sincerely appreciate what you're doing, and it matters, and it matters to us. Absolutely, guys. It matters. So along the way, I met my best friend, girlfriend, and wife. They're the same person, okay? And we now have 3 awesome kids. I've been active in the church where we have lived. I've coached my kids in soccer, so I'm very, very blessed and grateful. So, but I want a little sidebar here. I want you to keep in mind that my mindset coming into this podcast and the lenses of how I view the world and our reality in the United States right now is a patriot who loves his country and protects his family and neighbors. It's not just about my kids, it's about my neighbors. I'm a soldier, I'm a family man, a sinner saved by grace. As someone who studied our enemy and authoritarian ideologies, which still threaten our liberty and seek to destroy our country and our way of life. I've also seen the different groups of our adversaries, how the government slowly becomes oppressive and authoritarian. Because there's a model of how communism penetrates its victims and basically creates a two-state government or a two-group government, one of the people in charge and the other is basically slaves. So while the people have wanted a taste of the freedom and prosperity we are so blessed with every day, there are 2 parts, the government, the elite, actually, and the slaves. Now, more recently to today, I reconnected with a classmate of mine from West Point, Glenn Whitner, and it turned out that Glenn and I have many beliefs and values in common. So Glenn suggested that I get to know Jason Marocek, who, as you know, co-founded the Patriot Coalition back in 2004. And he also mentioned he ran for U.S. Congress in the great state of Texas. Just being Texan wasn't enough for Jason. He said, let's go all in. So kudos to Jason for that. So that's Army. I know the Marines, it's hoorah, and the Navy, it's hoo-yah, and I don't really know what the Coast Guard and the Air Force and Space Force. I don't know what they say, but
they'll come up with something.
They'll come up with something. For those of you listening, tell us what that is, okay? So after meeting Jason and hearing him talk about the mission of the Patriot Coalition of restoring constitutional governance, the importance of our Judeo-Christian heritage, which is very real and very true, his selfless and bold commitment to defending our country, both during service and after, and how he understands the threats against the United States, I knew the message Jason has had to be shared as broadly as possible, and creating a podcast just seemed like the best way to get the message out. Now, there are literally over 1 million podcasts, you know, out there in the podcast world. And there are many great conservative podcasts and patriotic podcasts. Doing this podcast here is relevant and important because Jason and I and you listening to this podcast have a sphere of influence, family, friends, colleagues, which those podcasts will never reach.
That's right.
Here's something else, folks. Here's something else is that the truth of what's going on in our nation and how our enemies have penetrated, you know, different parts of our country, it's going to come out. And Jason nor I want to be the person who stood on the sidelines. Okay?
Yep.
Jason's going to talk more about that later, but I don't want to be the one like in World War II. What were in Nazi Germany? What were the civilians doing? Were they aware? Not Jason, not me, not us. As you can see, I'm passionate about that. Okay? So every voice counts. One man or one woman can make a difference. So after I suggested a podcast, Jason's like, good idea, co-host. So I'm like, co-host, let's do this. So it is exciting. It's a tremendous honor and a joy to be, you know, affiliated with Jason in this endeavor, the Patriot Coalition Live Podcast. So Jason, back to you.
Well, the honor is mine, sir. I very much appreciate you stepping into the gap, being here with me and keeping me on the straight and narrow, making sure and helping this kind of message get out to as many folks as possible. So thank you for sharing your origin story. Amazing, amazing story. And this is a reminder to all the veterans, to all the service members, first responders who took that oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that oath does not expire.
That's right. That's right. So to that said, you've got to know your history. You've got to know your constitutional rights. And you're going to have to dig in, folks. There are many resources. We're just one of them. You got to know your enemy and how he fights. It, you know, from a military point of view, part of being an effective soldier, sailor, airman, marine, Coast Guard, you got to know your job. You got to know your enemy and what actions do you take. Here, what we're recommending you do is this: educate yourself, subscribe to this podcast. Our website, patriotcoalitionlive.com, is a great place to find resources. Get involved in local politics. Jason's the expert here. Okay, he's going to tell you more about that through time. Vote for those elected officials who represent and fight and defend, or fight for and defend constitutional ideals. The U.S. will always have threats, but those threats change through time. So we need to be able to recognize them and know how to engage those threats. So nowadays, we don't necessarily fight with a rifle or artillery. It can come to that. But knowing the Constitution, our laws, our foundation, and what we can do legally to restore constitutional governance and protect our nation for our children and our neighbors' future requires it.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. And so that brings us to the subject of today's episode. And the way that we're framing this is we're asking all of you a question. Do you call yourself a patriot? Think about
That's right.
it. I mean, we hear it a lot. We hear the word patriot thrown around, you know, patriot this, patriotism that, patriotic that. But does the word patriot mean the same thing to every person? I mean, chances are it doesn't. So you think about it by comparison. The word conservative, I mean, that word even now is being watered down and changed. So sometimes when somebody calls themselves a conservative, their actions don't match their rhetoric. And it is the same for the word patriot. So today we are placing a stake in the ground. We are are defining, we are giving everyone an idea of what we call a patriot. So that, to me, words have a great meaning. Words mean something, and they're supposed to mean something. And so the way I like to approach an exercise like this is I always like to go back to, you know, historical documents. You know, what does a definition mean of different words? The resource that I use is Webster's 1828 dictionary, right? It's pretty contemporaneous. It was done around the time of the founding, and it tells us what the words originally meant. Now,
can I add something to that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is that you alluded this and how we need to go back to the founding documents. We need to go back to the original meaning because words have been twisted and they change through time. The left is great at that.
Yeah, they will take a word, they will co-opt it, twist it, and they will use it for their own nefarious purposes. And usually in the process, try to block anybody else from using it for its intended purpose. And it's crazy to think about how words can be used like that, but make no mistake, they are. And this is probably a good opportunity just to let everybody know all of the topics that we're talking about in this podcast, you know, the original sources, the quotes, the references, all those sorts of things. We're going to list those on the episode page for this episode. So you'll be able to find that at patriotcoalitionlive.com. So let's start with that definition. So, Noah Webster in 1828, here's what he called a patriot. He said a patriot was a person who loves his country and zealously supports and defends it and its interests. So again, a person who loves his country and zealously supports and defends it and its interests. So let's take that from the top, you know, just kind of piece it out. And the first part of that definition is a person who loves his country. Now notice, Mr. Webster didn't say his government, right? He didn't say a person who loves his government. He said a person who loves his country. In fact, his definition of country from that same time refers to a geographic and political boundary. So his definition of country is the kingdom, state, or territory in which one is born, the land of nativity, or the particular district indefinitely in which one is born. So this is the part of the definition that applies to those natural born citizens who are patriots, right? The kingdom, state, or territory in which one is born. But there's the other part, which is a region of permanent habitation. And this applies to naturalized citizens. So yes, even obviously naturalized citizens can be patriots. And that part of the definition is speaks to it. So again, getting back to this concept of a person who loves his country. Now, a country in this case is geographic and political, as we just said. And originally, that consisted in the United States, as the name implies, is 13 states who came together to, quote, form a more perfect union, as it says in the preamble to the Constitution. You're saying, wait, what about the rest of the states? Well, in the Constitution, Article 4, Section 3, it actually gives us the ability to add states to the Union. And so that's how we went from 13. And now today, a patriot who loves his country is talking about all 50 states, or unless you're Obama and then it's 58, you know, so you gotta just kind of allow some people their own definitions, I guess. So it's 50 states that we have that we now call our country, and a person who loves his country, that's the first part of that definition.
But, can I add something there, Jason?
Sure.
You know, a lot of people have been, their good intentions have been co-opted to just focus on the negative history of the United States. Listen, it is what it is. We're not a perfect country, but there is also a lot of great that we've done too. Okay. However, if we just focus on that, it's kind of like beating your child. Okay. You've got to discipline your child, of course, for them to be a responsible adult one day. But you don't beat your child. People say, you know, they hate this, they hate that. I've even heard recently death to America, which is, you know, very unsettling. Yeah. But I mean, my challenge to you is when someone starts complaining about America and say, do you love America? And last time I asked somebody that, they said, like, I don't hate America. Well, it sounds like you hate America. I don't hate America. Do you love America? Because America is a living thing. it's kind of our child, folks. Yeah. You know, so you got to correct things, but show people that you love America, and you got to remember that it's your country.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So again, so we're talking about that part of the definition, a person who loves his country. But what is a country without its people? It really is just a swath of land. So by inference, a patriot who loves his country, he loves his fellow citizens as part of that country, right? And so Matt kind of just alluded to this. You know, you can love your country. Doesn't mean you're loving the land. You are doing this for the other citizens in the country, and obviously including your family and friends and so forth. And if you think about it, there's evidence of this, right? On this idea that we do this when we love our country, it's not just for the land. And you think about the veterans, you know, all of our service members and veterans and first responders. I mean, they all volunteered to potentially sacrifice, make the ultimate sacrifice on behalf of their country. Now, they didn't do that just for a plot of land, right? They did it for their loved ones and the pursuit of their livelihoods on that swath of land. So that's why it is about the people are what consists of the country. And it's really no coincidence that service members take the oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Can I add something there?
Yeah.
You know, notice Jason says the Constitution, not a person or leader. And if you're going to follow a leader, you got to make sure that they're following the Constitution and the ideals behind the Constitution. Because no matter what party, a person can go off path. So that's why we're swearing our oath to the Constitution and not a person.
That's exactly right. Yeah, it is constant as opposed to people's whims to change. So again, this definition, a person who loves his country and supports and zealously supports and defends it. So let's talk about that, and zealously supports and defends it. Now, zealously, that word is, in my opinion, the first difference between the today's lukewarm definition of the word patriot and the effective definition. Zealously is, as defined by Noah Webster, is with passionate ardor or with eagerness. Now, Matt, in no interpretation I can think of the word zealously, is it a passive activity? You can't zealously be passive, right? That's active.
There you go. And can I add something to that?
Yeah.
So people get angry. They throw their remote control at the TV. Yeah, they get upset, but they don't do something. So do something. And conversely, there are people who are zealously hating the United States. This is not people, just people, some people outside the United States, but some American citizens. So you need to do something. It needs to be for the United States.
Yeah. So what's also interesting about the definition, you know, it contains the word supports and defends. Well, those words are also in our Constitution and the very first act of Congress. So let's talk about that section of the Constitution, because you guys will get used to this. Again, I like to go back to original sources. What does it actually say? Not what do people say about it? So in Article 6, Section 3 of our Constitution, it says, the senators and representatives before mentioned and the members of the several state legislatures and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution.
Yeah, can I add something there?
Yep.
Okay, there was a time when a man said something, his word was his word. Now there are attorneys behind attorneys. There are countless examples how people have gone away from being good and honest and morals. You know, now right and wrong has been so skewed and gray.
Yeah.
Granted, there are hard decisions to make, but, you know, an oath means something.
It sure does. And it was so important to the founders, the framers of the Constitution, that obviously they put it in the Constitution itself. And then it was so critical that the very first section of the very first act of the very first Congress, it was bound to all elected officials. It was required that all elected officials take that oath. So it seems, if you're still with me, it seems that all roads in this definition lead back to the Constitution. There's all these ties. It's like the nexus. So let's talk about this recurring theme of supporting and defending the Constitution, right? The Constitution is only a document. It cannot defend itself. So in the final piece of that definition of a patriot, you know, a person who loves his country and zealously supports and defends it and its interests. So that last little piece in there, and its interests. This means the interests of the country. And so we already talked about, it's not just land. So a patriot supports and defends the interests of the citizens. They don't support the interests of the government. They don't support the interests of the political party. And they don't support the interests of foreign nations, as we're talking about the definition of a patriot. So let's recap really quick, because we've covered a lot of stuff in there in this definition. So a patriot is defined by two different pieces of the definition, his citizenship and his activity. So he must be a citizen, and he must actively and passionately support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and he must support and defend the interests of his fellow countrymen ahead of any other nation's interests. So that's a lot to talk about. And we've talked in through all of we talked to, we keep hearing this phrase, support and defend, support and defend. What does it mean to support and defend? Well, most people, I know what that means. Well, let's talk about, because this, in my mind, is the second distinction from today's lukewarm definition to the effective definition. So Webster says support is to vindicate, to maintain, and to defend successfully. Again, Matt, these are active verbs.
Not sitting on your couch, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. We cannot passively sit by as the Constitution is attacked, undermined, mm-hmm. usurped, infringed upon in some way, or even directly violated, and still claim to be supporting it. We just can't do those two things. Don't exist in the same space.
And nowadays, I mean, you guys got to understand, for those of you who have served in the military or our law enforcement folks, the United States, we spend billions of dollars annually to defend our country. Do you think our enemies and the enemies of freedom don't? They do, folks. They don't sleep. I've been privy to many threats and the knowledge of many threats to the United States. And if some of you knew what was going on, it would terrify you. Yeah. And imagine the smartest, hardworking, most empowered person you know, but with no morals, no scruples, hated the United States. And they took all their talents to destroy the United States. There are a lot of those around the world, folks, and they're very intelligent, they're very smart, and they attack the United States in ways that if you don't pay attention, you'll never know what's going on. So you have to educate yourself. You have to pay attention. You have to talk with other people so you can connect the dots and know what to do to make a difference.
Yeah, no, and that's a great segue, because we're just talking about what you must do to actively support and defend the Constitution. Well, it kind of begs the question, how will we know if the Constitution is under attack? And it's really a two-part answer. First, a patriot has to pay attention to politics in order to know that the enemies of liberty are up to something. And this is what Matt was just alluding to, right? It's always under attack. And a patriot must know and understand the Constitution in order to know if it's in jeopardy.
Yeah, that said, for you to know what wrong looks like, you need to know what right looks like. And Jason's very passionate about this. He, and I'm going to help a little bit, he and I are going to describe what good looks like, what right looks like, so that when you compare to what's going on in the United States, you can say, that ain't right. That's not good. And so you got to pay attention. You got to know what right looks like. You have to know what constitutional governance looks like.
That's exactly right. So, but once a patriot becomes aware of an attack, I mean, by his oath of service, he's committed to defending it until the threat is neutralized. I mean, those of you who've served in the armed forces out there, you know what this is about, right? So you're probably thinking, as we kind of alluded to, attacks to the Constitution happen all the time. So this is like, I've got to be on guard all the time. Well, yes, it does happen all the time. But we have to remember the warning that Thomas Paine gave us too. Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it.
That's right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Jason mentioned this earlier, but when we were in the military, it was kind of discouraged for us to participate in the political process. That's true, but it's wrong. Okay. How can we defend and support the Constitution as a soldier, as a Marine, as a sailor, as an airman, if we don't know what right looks like? And to what Jason just says, like men undergo the fatigue of supporting it. It's not just, you know, being in good shape, knowing your job. You got to know how the enemy fights, okay? Yes, it is already hard to be in the military. It's a lifestyle. It's not just an 8-to-5 job, okay? No matter what branch you're in. So you've got to educate yourself. So for those of you who are in the military right now, I don't care if you just got to basic training or boot camp or what have you, you need to educate yourself, and it'll make you a better troop.
Yeah, no, that brings up a great thought. For me, I had this sense that, I went in the military, my mission was focusing on the external enemies of the United States. And then when I got out of the service and I came back, I kind of was a little bit bitter. I said, wait a minute, I was off serving my country, and I come back, and this is happening from domestic enemies, the people who are allowing stuff to happen.
That's right. Why
did I go off and try to defend us from without when we're just going to allow all of this nonsense from within? So it really is about, Matt said, even if you're in basic training, think about what do you want your country to look like when you come back from your noble service? Because while you're involved and while you're in the service, you have to still be paying attention to politics. You may not talk about it in the workplace, but definitely be paying attention and voting. So we have to be very careful when we call ourselves a patriot, because we will have committed ourselves to a course that will last our entire lifetime. This,
and
as
to,
we said,
to your,
our oaths
to your
don't
point,
expire.
If I may say, sorry, Jason, is that, Jason said here, committed to a course for your lifetime. Okay. What better example is there than George Washington, who served over 50 years? 50 years. I'm not even 50 yet. 50 is still young, by the way. So, I remember one of my previous pastors says the Bible is worth studying your whole life. Well, America is worth defending our whole lives.
Absolutely. What a great point. So if you do call yourself a patriot, let's back up, because really anybody who pledges allegiance is duty bound, but patriots are going to receive a double dose of that scrutiny because they put the label on themselves, right? So it's a heavy burden to bear, especially as we talk about it. It's going to last your entire lifetime, but you don't have to do it alone. And that's where, many hands make light
right.
work. We
that's
have
right.
to all be involved so that, guys like, Matt and, others like him, they don't get worn down by constantly being on alert. We have to be, but with more people, it makes it easier. So working together with other patriots in an organized, common direction and aligned to the same strategy makes for a more effective use of our time when we support and defend the Constitution in accordance with our oath.
That's right. So guys, ladies and gentlemen, you, we, Jason, all of us, we are today's Minutemen. The Minutemen of our founding years, our founding years of our country, met in taverns, homes, churches. Today, we meet in small groups over the internet, in coffee shops, and through podcasts like this. The founding father and the founding patriots paid for and purchased the liberty we enjoy today with their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. Today, we are met on a different great battlefield, here in the podcast space and on the internet, to preserve the great blessings of liberty through our constitutional republic for our children, our neighbors, and their children, and we can do it peacefully.
Yep.
So, guys, it's not an easy struggle in front of us and before us. For a couple of generations, our education system has been planting in our children seeds of hate against America and discord amongst us. Right now, our enemies are eating popcorn. Say, go, America, fight, division, discord. We love it. Guys, okay, don't let your good intentions be co-opted and manipulated and taken advantage of to destroy America. Understand this, the United States ended slavery. We fought and won against Nazism, communism, developed a free enterprise system which brought prosperity around the world that has been never been seen before. Until only recently, we could practice our faith freely, which is happening going on right now. The U.S. makes up only 4% of the world population, but we account for more than half of the Nobel Peace Prize winners, inventions, artwork, you name it, okay? The United States is special. And conversely, communism is the one ideology singularly responsible for the deaths of over 100 million people in the last century. Most of which communism, most of those deaths, they killed their own citizens.
Wow, so I can really see the appeal of communism now. All these young kids. Wow.
Let me tell you what. There are no slick talkers than communists, and we'll have another podcast on what the origins of communism, socialism, leftism are. They start with Karl Marx and Joseph Engels. We'll talk about that. But there's good news. We have a voice. You have a voice. I'll quote Michael Knowles. You are not a slave if you are literate and you read books. I'll say that again. You are not a slave if you are literate and you read books. Let not your heart be troubled. We are here with you. Join us in our mission. Start with subscribing to this podcast. We also ask that you share this podcast with some of your friends. Go to our website, patriotcoalitionlive.com. Every bit of your support, folks, whether it's one-time gift or monthly support, is a tremendous help, and all of it is tax-deductible.
Yeah, also, please send us your questions at patriotcoalitionlive.com. Questions, comments, you know, tell us what you thought. We'd love to hear from you. And again, that's at patriotcoalitionlive.com, which also has all the sources that I mentioned before. So any of the quotes or sources or snippets from constitutional or pieces of law, et cetera, those will all be on in the show notes. So
that's it, guys. It's a wrap. Thank you for your attention. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, gang. Take care.